Primary Reaction Chamber.
We're Copper Raymond on.
Time.
Initial reaction at T-minus 30.
Fuel slug in place.
Stand by for injection.
Capsule breach now.
Reaction commencing.
Containment field hold to 3.14 meters of tar. Initial dangers flushing to capacity.
Can we hold it?
What's happening?
Critical mass.
Hold on!
Mine's bug!
I'm Winston Crutchfield. You're listening to Critical Mass Podcast. We've got kind of a long episode for you today. It was my great pleasure to have Peter Franson of Spirit Blade Productions in the Reaction Chamber. We talked about Spirit Blade and Green Lantern and comic books and all sorts of geeky goodness. And as usual, I started talking and stopped looking at my watch, so we're going to head right into that real quick. Before we do, Fear the Con 2 is coming up the first weekend of March, March 6th and 7th. I'm still really, really excited about getting to spend the weekend in St. Louis and premiering the Atomic Earth board game there. Stay tuned to this blog for details, and if you get And if you get the chance, stop by St. Louis and have fun with us out at Fear the Con 2, and that's hosted by the guys over at feartheboot.com. Great show. One more thing, and you're going to be hearing about this all year long, or until John Wilkerson tells me he's full of money, or, well, he's not really handling the money, but he's raising the money. $15,000 for a well, clean water for some village that needs it, hosted through Living Water International. There's a Facebook cause. You can donate through that very, very easily. This is a great cause. We need a lot of people to get on board. It's not really that difficult. This money can be raised, and it can be done. You know what? I'm going to let John Wilkerson tell you all about it, and then we'll go right into the interview.
Water. We drink it. We bathe in it. We wash our clothes in it. We need it to grow crops. We take it for granted, yet for 1.1 billion people in the world, clean water is a luxury. Unclean water threatens the lives of billions of people every day, but most of us listening to this don't know what life without clean water would be like. Something as simple as a public water fountain is an oddity to many people. We buy clean water in a bottle for $1, and that same dollar could give a person clean water for an entire year. I'm John Wilkerson, host of the Jesus Geek Podcast. Will you join me in raising funds to provide clean water to people who desperately need it? Please visit water.jesusgeek.info for more information on how you can change someone's life with just $1 a day. That's water.jesusgeek.info. Give water and give life.
All right, well, I'm in the Reaction Chamber with Peter Franson, the creator of Spirit Blade Productions. If you haven't heard of Spirit Blade or Spirit Blade Dark Ritual, crawl out from under a rock and go to his website, spiritblade.net, and check it out. Peter, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Yourself?
So far, so good. Now, we were starting off, tell us a little bit about, just about Spirit Blade in general. Can you give us just kind of a feel for what the world of Spirit Blade is like?
Sure. Well, I mean, first off, it's an audio drama, so that's like a movie you listen to with a full cast and sound effects and a score that goes along with it. And this particular story, Spirit Blade, takes place in it's kind of a dystopian future where the idea of relativism, that whatever what everybody believes is all equally valid, that has kind of taken over. And so absolute truth and the belief in absolutes is completely outlawed. But there's a group of men called the Underground Liberation that are trying to find out the truth about what's really going on behind the curtain, as it were, of the universe. What are the powers at be that are controlling our destiny, and what is our ultimate purpose in life?
These are all very good questions. Do you give us some answers?
Yeah, in Spirit Blade, there's quite a few answers. Now, you don't get all the answers because I wrote it, and I don't have all the answers. But
now, see, you're supposed to say you got to buy the product to get the answers. Come on, work with me here.
Well, you will definitely have more answers than you started with if you get Spirit Blade.
Or at least more questions, right?
Well, some more questions as well, yeah, and that's why you get the second one.
Cool. Now, you said it's a full cast audio drama. We're not talking an audio book here. This is the whole hog. You know, you've got different.
Yeah, that's right. It's a very different animal from audiobook. It's a full cast, so it's like, you know, it's like a movie, a full blown movie experience that you listen to while maybe you're exercising or making that commute to work or you know, whatever you've got to do that doesn't allow you to stare at a screen. You know, it's just kind of a great way to escape your workout or your, you know, mundane commute.
Full cast audio drama, sound effects, the whole deal, and I gotta say, having listened to Spirit Blade 1 and to Dark Ritual, it's fantastic. You do a great job mastering all the sound effects, and I don't know if you're using a Dolby digital encoder, but there was a huge difference when I put it in my stereo as opposed to just listening on headphones, and it just lit up through the 5.1 surround and just really made everything come to life. So yeah, if I'd have had the TV on, I would have expected something on there. So yeah, it's really, really good. But
great. That's great to hear.
I wanna hear a little bit about the influences. You know, what are you thinking of when you were, you know, when you were writing this, when you're first coming into it? Because the feeling I get is a very cyberpunk kind of future with the high tech, low tech contrast and the corporations who rule the world. What are some of your influences in that kind of sci-fi genre?
Yeah, I'd say cyberpunk definitely played a role, much so in Spirit Blade, the first story, and then some of my love I really love the blend of sci-fi and fantasy. Like, I've been playing the Final Fantasy games, you know, since the first one came out on the original Nintendo, and I love their blend of both sci-fi and fantasy, and so that's why I like to blend in Spirit Blade supernatural and science fiction, and we take that even further in Spirit Blade Dark Ritual, where they're almost in kind of a fantasy type setting, but still, you know, technology and cybernetics and stuff comes into play. So definitely stuff like comic books, the Matrix trilogy, a lot of it really comes from comic books, because the superhero genre in comic books, it's a mix and match of all kinds of speculative fiction genres, and I just love having the whole palette to play with. I would say comic books are probably the bigger influencer. I would say also that Frank Peretti, his This Present Darkness and Piercing the Darkness were some early inspirations, as well as a series by Gene Edwards called The Chronicles of the Door, or I think it's been retitled The Chronicles of Heaven in more recent editions.
I didn't realize they'd retitled that. I read those when they were the Chronicles of the Door, and that was some really, really good stuff. And Frank Peretti has some similar material. Down there, the door in the dragon's throat and that kind of thing, you know, geared towards a similar audience like that. Peretti is generally credited with kickstarting the whole Christian as spiritual fantasy, so that's not surprising. Everybody knows This Present Darkness and Piercing the Darkness and his other works. I think Visitation is one of my favorite Peretti works. But that's a good author, some good stuff there. But that goes right into the spirit world is a huge, huge factor in both Dark Ritual and in Spirit Blade as well. You know, because you've got a lot of action taking place on the spirit plane, and you know, this kind of pseudo alternate. You know, I don't want to say alternate reality, but this kind of pseudo astral plane where the demons and the angels dwell, and then your heroes go in there and you know, interact with that as well. What are some of your influences when you were working that out? Peretti again, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, and what Peretti What Freddy didn't do was bring humans into the kind of spirit plane that he played with. He always kept the humans separate from that. And I wanted the humans to get in there and, you know, roll up their sleeves and get in tussles with demons, you know. And so that seemed like a, you know, just an obvious direction to head in for somebody that's a big superhero geek like me. And then also using the spirit world would allow me to kind of change the rules up, make cool action bits possible. So I pulled, shamelessly pulled visual concepts and ideas from the superhero Green Lantern from DC Comics and basically pulled into the spirit world, allowing my heroes to kind of create things and just out of their imagination and the swirling mysteries of the spirit world.
Sure. And when you say shameless, you're not kidding. There is a scene in Spirit Blade where one of your characters, Vincent, takes on a trio of demons, and he does some signature Green Lantern moves in there. Don't think that we didn't notice that. But that's pretty cool. So yeah, I know you're a big comic book buff, and you know, Green Lantern's one of your favorites. You speak a lot about comic books on your show, Spirit Blade Underground. So, and I know we've talked before. You share some of my just general frustration with the state of comic books, you know, today. You got a few choice words for us on that?
Yeah, I mean, a few years ago, it was just a great time to be a comic book fan, and I think it could still be again. But we're having a rough couple of years here, and you know, I cast the blame on editorial. I mean, it's easy to pull up a name like Grant Morrison and inflict my wrath. But this is Dan DiDio all the way. I mean, you know, when I listen to podcasts, he's the chief editor, Big Honcho at DC. You know, he's the guy that's greenlighting guys like Grant Morrison. And I don't know what those guys are thinking with these convoluted, weird stories that, you know, I don't know what's going on. It's just crazy over at DC right now.
Well, Marvel's not doing a whole lot better. Joe Quesada is the one in charge, and the mandates to abuse both Spider-Man and Captain America came down from the top. I mean, those stories weren't presented by writers and said, "Hey, you know, this is cool. Can we do this to these characters?" That was something that Quesada handed down from the top. Said, "This is what I want to happen. Now figure out a way to sell it to the fans." So yeah,
it's like a classic when the producers try to be the creative folks. When movie producers think they got a great idea, you know, it's the same stinking problem.
Well, I guess Quesada's pretty vulnerable to that kind of thing. I mean, he started in the industry as an artist, and so I guess now that he's editor in chief of Marvel, he thinks he knows, you know, since he can, you know, and he's a very talented artist. I don't want to take anything away from him. He did a great run on Daredevil, and he did some really good stuff over for DC also with Sword of Azrael way back when. So I'm not trying to take anything away from him there, but I don't know. Maybe he ought to stick to drawing instead of editorial direction. I don't know.
I would like, and probably going to differ with me on this, but I would love to see the age where DiDio steps down and hands the reins to Geoff Johns, where he's calling the shots for the DC Universe.
You know, I really wouldn't have a problem with that. I recognize that Geoff Johns is got some major talent, and more than that, I think he shares a fondness for the core of characters that he has been given charge of. My problems with Geoff Johns, I finally boiled this down to, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time, I think. Because he just happened to be the guy who took over and changed the direction of some of my favorite characters at certain points in time. And I actually really have enjoyed most of his more recent work, his first 2-year run on Teen Titans. leaps to mind, and then Infinite Crisis and 52 and all the things that he's done since then has all been just absolutely top-notch stuff. But I don't know, I'm grumpy. That's all there is to it.
No, I hear you, though. He had some rough spots early on. I think Day of Judgment and that whole Hal Jordan thing, I think he meant well because he loves Hal Jordan, but it was just a weird, wonky thing that, you know, with Hal being the Spectre, and more so, I guess, how they handled it after Geoff Johns initially caused that transformation to come about. But, yeah, and his start on The Flash was a little bit rough for me. When he started telling stories about the Rogues and exploring their character, I think that's when he hit his stride, when Johns started writing stories about, as you said, the core of who these characters are and kind of reinvigorating that. I think he does an excellent job with that. So I'd love to see him call the shots and basically reinvigorate, have a staff meeting with everybody at DC and just say, okay, here's the core of this person, here's the core of this character and stuff like that, and start to reinvigorate in the whole universe. I think it could be awesome.
You know what? I have to agree with you. I think a lot of the changes that have, not been for the better have revolved around the deconstruction of characters, you know, reducing them to abstracts and then rebuilding them in an entirely different direction. I think that's what we're seeing happen right now with Batman. And the character, the character will survive, but in the meantime, I'm going to have to look for something else to read.
Yeah, I'm with you. Wake me up when it's over, DC.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, that this is a good point of departure because we kind of differ on going back to Green Lantern. We kind of have different perspectives on the Green Lantern concept and on the Green Lantern character. But before we kind of want to get into that, I want you to tell me, since I know you're just a huge, huge Green Lantern fan, overshadow me by worlds, I'm sure. What do you think of as your first encounter with Green Lantern? When did this concept really first capture your imagination?
Well, I think imagination is the key word. When I was watching like the Super Friends show, the Superpowers show in the 80s as a kid, I have memories of, you know, grabbing my dad's old college class ring and running around the house, you know, and being Green Lantern. I just thought he was awesome because he could create these objects, just whatever he wanted, you know. And so the idea of being able to bring my imagination to physical reality was so appealing to me. But then, you know, I kind of, when that show stopped, I kind of fell away from Green Lantern until about late elementary, when the character was revitalized. I believe it was Kevin Dooley that was editing at the time. I could be wrong, even though he kind of destroyed Hal Jordan later on. But Emerald Dawn was a series that kind of reestablished Hal Jordan's origin, and a friend of mine let me borrow his copy of that miniseries, and I just loved it. And that's when my love for Green Lantern was restored. I didn't start collecting him regularly, though, until probably about four or five years later, when I got a job and I could buy my own comics. And then, I was really bored. Yeah.
Yeah, I understand. I remember Green Lantern from the Super Friends, and that, you know, that's probably where I left it. I bought Emerald Dawn when it came out, and I liked that. And I bought Emerald Dawn 2 when it came out, and I liked that. And I got the first couple of issues of the new series when it premiered in late 80s, I guess, 89 or 90, I forget. I just kind of fell away. I never caught the the character of Hal Jordan never really clicked with me. So when I don't know. So when they brought in Kyle and the Reign of the Superman, you know, I came in and I said, oh, this is a new guy. This could be cool. But what kept me on the book was Ron Mars, because Mars had just come off of, or was concurrently writing, I forget which, Silver Surfer for DC or for Marvel, and so when he comes over into to DC, I'm like, oh, you know what? I know Ron Mars. Ron Mars knows characters, and Ron Mars knows cosmic. So I stuck around for that, and I really, really got into the book after that point.
Yeah, you know, that's actually kind of when I jumped on, too. I had been off and on the years before that, and when the whole Reign of Superman thing came and they were doing this crazy stuff to Green Lantern, I didn't follow it at first, but then, you know, maybe a year later I went back and I started buying back issues of Kyle's run, and then also at the same time I was buying a bunch of back issues of Hal Jordan stuff before that. So I was kind of collecting both at the same time, but I certainly did find the whole direction they were going very interesting. The only thing that I had, and I wasn't like married to Hal Jordan. It was the concept in all the various incarnations of Green Lantern. To me, it's always about the concept. And what I missed in Kyle's tenure was the missing Green Lantern core. I thought that was a really, for lack of a better word, core concept. You know, so I missed that. There, but I thought that the stories were done really well. The art was great. Kyle obviously has a much richer imagination than Hal Jordan ever had, so that was really enjoyable. And I miss Kyle's imagination in the current Green Lantern stories. You know, I mean they're cool, but I wish, you know, there's nothing like an artist's imagination.
Right. You know what? You're not alone. And I was really kind of surprised to find out just how much you're not alone. The DC message boards are abuzz with Green Lantern Core this, Green Lantern Core that. You know, everybody's on about the Green Lantern Core. And the guys over at LanternCast, you know, made this comment. They're like, you know, Green Lantern's awesome, and, you know, Hal Jordan was okay, but, you know, we came on with Kyle, and Kyle's our Green Lantern, you know, kind of the same, you know, same time, time period that we did there. And the appealing thing about Kyle was that anybody could be Green Lantern. You know, he could be you. And now that the core is back, it's not just him, it's a whole bunch of people. And any one of them, you know, they're in dangerous situations, and at any moment, you know, some Green Lantern somewhere in the galaxy could be aced by Starro, and, you know, this ring will come, you know, sweeping out of the sky and pick you.
Yeah.
Don't tell me you don't look up and wonder what every flash of green in the night sky is. I picked up Recharge, Green Lantern Corps Recharge, where they really started to revitalize that concept, but I haven't stuck with the book since then. That's Green Lantern is the Green Lantern Corps is slated to be the next big event over at DC, and I know we were just complaining about the big events, but you know, you got your wish. Jess Johns is in charge of this one.
Oh yeah, I'm very much looking forward to Blackest Night. I think what's going to be interesting is it'll probably be a very dark story, which I'm always in the mood for dark stories. But it's also going to play up, I think, Jeff Johns' strengths, and that is his knowledge and love of the DC Universe. Chances are we're going to see the resurrection of nearly, if not every, dead DC character out there, you know. I've got this bizarre idea in my mind that Pa Kent is going to come back from the dead and have a really screwy encounter with a really dark, messed up story with Superman. I don't know, but I think that would be cool. And then hopefully at the end he'll somehow be resurrected, because I think killing Pa Kent was a really stupid thing, but that's a rabbit trail.
No, I'm wholehearted with you there. You know, that was a great dynamic that they just missed out on so much, you know, just so much there. And I think that stems from a whole lot of things, but you know, our world's pretty messed up, and I think the people in charge are getting to be under the impression that you can't have your characters with a happy and healthy family life, because nobody will buy it. What's up with that?
Well, on some level, I also wonder, with divorce rates so high, I wonder how many writers at DC are capable of writing a story from that perspective and recognize all the complexities and, you know, difficult things and wonderful things that come in that kind of a family environment.
You know, it makes you wonder, have you been following Blue Beetle?
Yes, I have. It's got one more issue, and then it's done, and I'm sad to see it go.
I have I confess I have not. In fact, I haven't paid any attention to the character, whatever, you know, at all. I know that his name is Jaime Reyes, and that's about it. And it took me the longest time, because I was watching the new Batman, Brave and the Bold, which, if you're not watching, you should be. They've done two Green Lantern episodes already, and they were both loads of fun. But it's neither here nor there. But they keep calling him Jaime, and it took me for the longest time. I had to go to the message boards to figure out that apparently he's Mexican, and that's how you say the name. So I don't know. That's a whole nother rabbit trail there. But from what I understand, you know, the Reyes character, the current Blue Beetle character, embodies just all of these things that we've been looking for. The healthy family life, because apparently he's not keeping secrets from his parents. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually surprising how many people know his identity. And his parents are like, they're supportive of him. It's this weird, it's a very functional, loving family, but still with the squabbles that come from, that even exist in a healthy, loving family. It's just it's a wonderful, fresh take on superheroism.
Hmm. Well, it's what we need to see more of, and I don't know how long it's going to be before we get to do that. I don't know. We just keep our eyes peeled. So
I was just going to say, I think they tried to do it with the Flash, with the Wally West, but the bonehead decision they made there was to give him a family, but then also make his kids superheroes running out fighting crime with him. And I think a family man superhero can work, but I think a much more interesting story would have been Wally trying to balance his superheroic career with being a dad of normal kids, you know, and a normal wife. I thought it was weird to put him in costumes and make the book a super family book, you know?
You know, I wouldn't have had a problem with that if the kids had been teenagers. Because I love the Teen Titans, and I think there's just so much potential there for just good storytelling with characters that are young enough and inexperienced enough. They're allowed to make mistakes, you know, unlike the adults, especially adults like Wally West has been in the superhero business for 20 plus years. You know, he ought to know better. And you know, a lot of the characters that were the Teen Titans have grown up, and their mentors mm-hmm. have been doing this for years and years and years. So if, you know, if something goes wrong, it's not because they've made a mistake. Usually they've been outthought, or they've been overpowered, or any number of things. And I think again, that's neither here nor there. So what kind of things are you anticipating to come out of the Blackest Night? What kind of things would you really like to see them do with the Green Lantern Corps, or maybe with some of the other colored corps?
Oh gosh, you know, I have no idea what to expect. Maybe that's what's so exciting about Blackest Night to me, is I have no idea really what to expect out of it. I love that that Black Hand is going to be a major figure in Blackest Night, and you know, he was a really lame concept, you know, hero or a villain, I mean, and who didn't even fit his name. His shtick didn't fit his name, but now it's, you know, starting to finally fit. And so I have no idea what to expect. I haven't heard rumors. I don't know what the repercussions are going to be for the DC universe. And I think that's what's so exciting to me is I have no idea what is going to happen. And it's all being run by Jeff Johns.
And there you go. All right. Well, what are you've been with Green Lantern all this time? What are some of your favorite Green Lantern stories, or what are some of your favorite characters in the Corps?
Well, let's see. I like what they've done with Hal Jordan, just making him a little bit more interesting. I mean, let's face it, he was a bland character. There's not much getting around that. But Jeff Johns kind of brought back him. He put him back in the cockpit of fighter jets and brought out some of that military stuff that I found really interesting, and played around with his interest, his love interest, Cowgirl, and I love the pulling out the history of the Green Lantern Corps, like the Manhunters. You know, that stuff at the very beginning of the new run was really interesting, and I've had mixed feelings about kind of the revamped origin that they've kind of been running him through, the recent Secret Origin story arc, because it kind of erased some stuff in Emerald Dawn, and I just thought Emerald Dawn was such a wonderful story that I wish they wouldn't have done anything to erase it. So actually I've had mixed feelings in some cases with Geoff Johns' decisions on Green Lantern, but I think as a whole it's really interesting. I'm kind of in I guess pause mode right now, waiting to see what happens with all these multicolored lanterns, because I think that, you know, it's interesting to have, like, you know, anger for red and fear for yellow and hope for blue and stuff, but I'm wondering if at some point they're just going to start chucking these things out and not investing the explanation and the character-driven bits to make those colors and concepts work and not just be this lame rainbow. Like, okay, well, we got two more colors to do. What do you got, guys? Okay, let's, this is the color of feeling funkalicious, you know, or whatever. And, you know, and it would just get kind of pointless and stupid and just kind of filling in the blanks. So I'm rambling. I don't really know what I'm saying. But that's what I'm wondering if it's going to happen. But so far, it's been an interesting ride. So I'm willing to stick it out and see what happens.
Funkalicious, that would be the Paisley rings, right?
Yeah, that's right, yep.
I thought it was, yeah. Didn't I get one of those in this last box of tricks? Well, one of my favorite Green Lantern concepts came from, as you know, and this is his stories are receiving fresh attention, as well they should. Alan Moore did several very, very choice stories back in the 80s. And one of them has Arisia going all the way out to the edge of the universe where there is no light, and she gives a Green Lantern ring to a character that is completely blind. So he doesn't, he thinks in terms of sound. And he winds up using the ring, and they call it the F-sharp bell. And that's his, that's how he wields his Green Lantern ring. And that was an Alan Moore story back from the 80s, and it's receiving some fresh attention again, as well as his prophecy about the in Tiger Tiger, which I think was in one of the annuals, where Abin Sur receives the prophecy of the Blackest Night. That's getting some fresh attention. So I'm interested to see where they're taking all of that. And it's going to be some exciting time. You're absolutely right. Well, speaking of sound and F-sharp bells, we can go back over to Spirit Blade. You did such an immersive job with creating the Spirit Blade universe. But what drew me in the most was really the music. You know, was really the sound design of Spirit Blade.
Cool.
I can't get away from that. I find myself still when, just the songs themselves come back, to echo around in my head. And when I'm in the mood to write good sci-fi, I used to put in, Billy Idol's, Cyberpunk or, something by, Enigma. Something with that kind of sound. I think Spirit Blade has kind of replaced that for me. Now, I hear, and this is off the subject, I want to come back to it a little later, but I hear you're putting together an album of just music from both projects?
That's true. I'm not sure what the timing of that's going to be. It'll either be later 2009 or close to the beginning of 2010. I've already started doing remixes of the songs in Spirit Blades to reflect kind of my growth as an artist. I feel like I've grown quite a bit between the production of Spirit Blade and creating Dark Rituals. So I'm remixing the songs from Spirit Blade, but I'll also include the original mixes as kind of bonus tracks on the CD. And then I'm going to include the songs from Dark Ritual as well, and a few songs that were not part of either project.
Wow. That gives me something to look forward to, definitely. But yeah, you talk
me too.
About
that. I'm having fun.
I imagine. You spoke a bit about the difference between the two, and there really is. There's a huge musical difference between Spirit Blade and Dark Ritual. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm just going to call the musical style in Spirit Blade this kind of hard-edged techno kind of thing. And that's just how I think of it. You know, whether or not that's what you intended, but you know, that's kind of where it lands for me, and it was really, really good. And when you come over to Dark Ritual, you come in with a more orchestral gothic kind of feel in the music, and you put me in you put me in a difficult place because I love them both and they're so different. You want to talk a little bit about what you're thinking between the two there?
Sure. Yeah. Now, well, first off, you know, I don't really care how you describe them as long as it sounds cool. because I don't really know how to describe them. I'm not like part of the electronic underground movement. I don't go to clubs. I would be such a geek at a club. Everybody would be dancing around and going crazy, and I'd be like, you know, sitting down in a corner booth just with my head bowed, eyes closed, just taking in the music and just absorbing it. You know, I'd be in a totally, I enjoy it for a very different reason than I think I experience it in a very different way from like the clubbing, rocking out, type folks. But the first one, Spirit Blade, was much more just straight up electronic. Yeah, I did try to give it a little bit of a harder edge when I could, or a little bit more of an industrial sound in some of the songs. My influences there were a little bit more of the slightly brighter, maybe you might say European electronic music sound, I'm not sure. My growth as an artist and also some stylistic changes in the themes of Dark Ritual led to kind of the sound of Dark Ritual being more orchestral or choral in some songs. And that really, part of that, I just love that juxtapositioning of styles. Just as I like the mix of sci-fi and fantasy, I love the mix of orchestral, choral, and then also, you know, dark electronic with a splash of rock or something like that, just kind of these weird blends of genres. And then also the orchestral and choral stuff, they lent themselves to the project because of the themes in Dark Ritual of ancient religion and ancient religious tradition and stuff like that are kind of layered in the themes of Dark Ritual. So that fed into that stylistic change as well.
And in fact, when you wrote most of the songs, I noticed in Dark Ritual, looking at the flyleaf there, most of those are recreations or reimaginings of old hymns, right?
Yeah, that's right. Now, there's several of them that I think folks won't recognize. I mean, there'll be some like Near My God to Thee will definitely be one, and I can't remember the name of the other one because I kind of blended them together. But there'll be one or two that I think people will definitely recognize, but I also went back to like really old, you know, Lutheran liturgical, you know, hymnals where, you know, they're so old the songs don't even have names. They just got numbers and, you know, stuff like that, and pulled some of that material out and reworked it, put it in a minor key, or made some adjustments to the melody or whatever, and tried to bring those to life in a new way because, you know, again, they would reflect the Sanctafi, the antagonists in Dark Ritual. So yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you're not the first person to do that. You come from a venerable tradition there. In fact, most of those the hymns, the further back you go, weren't written for musical accompaniment at all. And in fact, Luther and Calvin were renowned for either writing hymns specifically for a cappella worship or removing from hymns the background simply because they thought the music detracted from the worship experience. And so the fact that you go in and re-envision those for another generation puts you in very, very good company. You know, plus you're keeping that solid theological foundation that these hymns had, and I really, really appreciated that part.
Well, yeah, that's what I think is missing in a lot of worship music today is just the theological richness of the hymns. Because these guys, you know, a lot of these hymn writers, they weren't primarily musicians, they were primarily theologians, and they'd borrow a folk tune or maybe what was even being sung in a bar, you know, that a tune that people would recognize, and they throw new words to it, you know. So, I'm happy to, very awkwardly, attempt to follow through with kind of what they were doing.
Well, as it happens, probably the song that I think of the most when I think of Spirit Blade and Dark Ritual, either one, is not a reworking of a hymn, but is an original song, Necromancy. And you have kindly provided that, so I'm going to go ahead and play that for the audience. Give them just a little taste of Spirit Blade and Dark Ritual right now.
All right.
Let's begin. Surrounding me, so much more friends. Abandoned, forgotten, alone I descend.
But one creature, a new existence. All that I have left, cling here to my defense.
Bring me to life,
Your sacrifice rescues my soul from this hell. Bring me to life. A grip like a vice is pulling me under its spell. Bring me to life.
There we go, necromancy. Now I'm going to be humming that for the rest of the day. That's your fault. I want you to know that.
All right.
That's all the spirit blade you're going to get on the show today, but you have just a ton of stuff on your website to make this an immersive experience before you even go, you know, before people even go and buy the CDs. And I'm telling you, people, buy the CDs, get them both, do it today. Anyway, but tell us a little bit about what kind of bonus material you've got on the website.
Oh, there's just a ton there. I mean, first off, I know what we're doing is kind of weird and outside the box, and so I want people to be able to test the water as much as possible before they make a purchase. So you can download for free in high-quality audio, the same quality you'll get when you buy it. You can download for free the first hour of Spirit Blade, same with the first 40 minutes of Dark Ritual. So you can really test the waters and see what we're doing and decide if it's something you'd be interested in. And then there's a ton of free downloads for Spirit Blade. There's an entire audio commentary for Spirit Blade that you can download in separate chapters. There's behind-the-scenes stuff, making of songs, recording, you know, scene recordings, and there's a you can be a fly on the wall and listen to me and my buddy Mike Tully, you know, screwing around and, you know, messing things up as we record, and so just funny, weird stuff. A lot of the kind of things you would find on the DVD, the kind of special features that that you would dig on a DVD. That's the kind of stuff that we're making for free on the media page at SpiritBlade.net.
But only if you act in the next 10 minutes, people. We can't do this all night. No, wait, we probably can, can't we? No, that's cool. Yeah, there's lots of good stuff there. And I'm going to say go ahead and look for the Rhythm of the Bullets, the Wonder Woman song, which is one of my favorites on the website. That's really, really cool. But not everything is Spirit Blade over at Spirit Blade Productions, right? We mentioned the music project you got coming up, and you've got something else in the works. In fact, you're auditioning right now, right?
Yeah, people are encouraged to send me their audition for if they have a mic and want to do some recording and some acting with us. The Pilgrim's Progress is a classic work by John Bunyan that I'm adapting into an ongoing series, and the first episode is what we are looking to cast right now. So you can go to, let's see, what would be the easiest way? I'd say spiritblade.typepad.com. You can get all the audition information there, or you know what, just email me at info@spiritblade.net and I'll get you hooked up with all the information you need. But we're casting for that right now, and I also started recently a group of volunteer artists called the Spirit Blade Underground Alliance. That's just a bunch of people, including myself, who are volunteering their time to produce Christian sci-fi and fantasy audio drama that will then be made available for free at spiritblade.net. So if you're an artsy person, an actor, an audio mixer, or a visual artist, and we're looking for all kinds of creative folks, you can go to spiritblade.net and click on Operations, the Operations Media tab, and find out how to get involved.
Cool. Fantastic. Now, I remember Pilgrim's Progress. I read it in high school, and please tell me this is not your father's Pilgrim Progress.
It is not. I think that, you know, those that look at the Pilgrim's Progress as like this purest thing that should never be touched and, you know, it shouldn't be modernized or whatever, they're not going to like this. I think that the purists for Pilgrim's, I encourage people to read Pilgrim's Progress, but for purposes of studying it, to think about, you know, to analyze it and get everything that John Bunyan intended out of it. But in for today's average person, it's not a particularly, I don't think, an entertaining story. And what I'm trying to do is make it into an entertaining fantasy adventure that retains as much as possible the kinds of ideas that John Bunyan wanted his audience to think about as they read his work.
Well, that's that ought to be a lot better. Now, you've got that website over there at spiritblade.net, and that will act as a gateway for everything we've talked about for the audition. You've got your own blog, Pater's Brain, is that right?
That's right, yep, patersbrain.blogspot.com. You can find your way there from spiritblade.net as well.
Fantastic. And, again, you're not just on about Spirit Blade on there. I think I remember you blogging about your latest DC Heroes role-playing campaign not too long ago, right?
Yeah, Pater's Brain is really, it doesn't have anything to do with Spirit Blade Productions. It's just me geeking out and talking about my geeky things, yeah.
What do you know? You're a real person.
Yeah.
So, one more question. I was poking around on the website. I know a lot of people have a cafe press store. Do you do Spirit Blade swag? Can we buy t-shirts and hats and stuff?
No, and that's something that I've thought about. It's probably something I'll get around to in the future, but nothing like that right now. But I'm glad you brought that up because I need to remember to look into the options there.
Maybe you'll get a lot of email requests for that then. Well, Pater, thank you so much for taking your time out to talk to me today. I know you're a busy guy. You got music to write and all kinds of other stuff to do, and I just appreciate you coming in and talking Green Lantern and comic books and Spirit Blade and everything with me.
It is my pleasure.
Email at mindspike@criticalpressmedia.com.